Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for its 27th year. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Angelica Carrero, Directrice Générale of l'Association de Radiodiffuseurs Communautaires du Québec. Here's our conversation. Well, Angelica, you recently became the Directrice Générale of l'Association de Radiodiffuseurs Communautaires du Québec. Can you speak about the work that your organization does and hope for its future?
Yes, of course, Catherine. The association represents, community radio stations in Quebec, and we represent their rights, basically. We want to create partnerships. We want to further promote and recognize their contribution and role. And of course, we also try to develop the community radio sector. So where it be by research or collecting data or, you know, even just helping our members finding new ways of financing themselves. You know, we just really try to help them thrive and ensure, a positive outcome on their activities. So, yeah, that's what the association does.
Your association has signed on to the Soutenir nos médias, c'est protéger notre culture et notre économie initiative. Can you tell me a bit more about this project and what it will accomplish for Canada's more than 8 million francophones?
Yeah, we're really excited about that because we are part of, there's many medias that have joined that initiative and we're part of that. And basically what that does is, as you know, Catherine, we're talking a lot about, you know, consuming local products, being local. So basically that's what it is, but in terms of media. So choosing local, choosing to listen to the news locally, choosing to listen to music locally, you know, artists from Quebec. Encouraging that choice. That's what we're doing. So, because of course, as you know, things are not very good at the moment for artists and, you know, culture and medias. So definitely that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to promote this and making people aware of the situation and that they just, you know, the choice is obvious and that's what we have to do in order for our economy to go even better. So.
In your view, why is community radio still relevant and important?
I think it's even more relevant than it ever was because we're losing the quality in all the communications that we have. I mean, we have so many ways of communicating, but I'm not sure that all these ways have the quality that they should have. Of course, one may think of social media as being something that is very present, but nevertheless, it does not necessarily have that, you know, that quality or that, you know, reliability. So I think that radios, community radios do serve that purpose. I think that we are giving out information that is accurate, that is trustworthy. So I think that we're even more relevant and important than we were. And there's also, I think, the aspect of closeness. I was reading this in an article from Michel Collin, and he was mentioning this, and I thought it made lots of sense. It's the closeness that you have with radio that you don't have with other mediums. For example, if you're reading newspaper or you're just reading something on social media, you don't have a voice. You don't have somebody talking to you. So there's this closeness that really, you know, brings us together and that actually reassures us, comforts us, and informs us in a way that is objective and, you know, the best possible way because it is another human being telling us or giving us this information. So I think that for those reasons, community radios are just absolutely vital.
What changes do you see within community radio in the last, say, 5 years?
You mean in the coming 5 years? What changes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the coming 5 years.
I think that they're just going to be more and more present. Because of what I just said, I think things will just, of course, we have to work hard for that, but I think that things will naturally tend to go that way because that's what happens. If you have all these Big corporations, or other types of less personal ways of communicating, people will always want to come back to that. So I think that naturally people will ask for it because they'll know that it has a certain value. But of course, radios have to work very hard, and the associations are there to help them, of course. So, but yes, I think that we have to keep on showing how we do things, and that we value quality, and we value things that are objective, and that we're trying to inform people the best possible way, and that we're also giving them ways of also entertaining them that don't just necessarily include one type of entertainment. We try to be more open. So yes, yeah, so I think that that's we have to keep on working hard in doing what we already do, but letting more people know about it. I think that that's what we have to do.
Great point. As you know, March is the month of the Francophonie. How can the Francophonie continue to grow and flourish?
Yes, a very important month. I think that we have to keep on promoting that, right? I think it's really essential. We have to keep on promoting the French language. I think that we are part of a big community, an international community. Within the country, we are, there's lots of Francophones, even if we're not in majority, but there is still a big presence. But also on an international level. So I think that we have to keep on promoting that and showing that it is important not to lose it. And I think that the best way of doing that is going back to the kids. So kids are the important part of in all this equation, I find. We have to keep on letting them know that French is important, and we have to keep on learning it and valuing it, even though, many other languages exist, but French has an important place within Canada and within the international sphere.
Are you doing anything special for the month of the Francophonie?
Well, we're always in French, so for me it's just business as usual. But of course, yes, trying to read and promote the language, anything that can be done around French, we're always, trying to do this. So yeah, it's for us, it's just routine, so we just keep on promoting what we usually do.
Well, very much appreciate you making time for me today and hope it's a great month.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
Yeah, take care.
That was my conversation with Angelica Carrero, Directrice Générale of l'Association de Radiodiffuseurs Communautaires du Québec. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2025. Thanks for tuning in. Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for its 27th year. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Alexandre Chartier, Executive Director of Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. Here's our conversation.
So, Alexandre, you're the Executive Director of la Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. Can you tell me what the society does and your hopes for its future?
Yeah, so it's Société Historique de Saskatchewan, the French Historical Society, to work on the Saskatchewan history and before the history of the province of Saskatchewan and Prairie. So we work to protect, to preserve, and to share Francophone history in the Prairie French Canadian Prairies in Saskatchewan in the Western. We're beginning in Nouvelle-France, and so far in the Nouvelle-France. So about the activities, we have for the preservation, we have an archive center since 2019 with two archivists. So we develop a regular services in the archive, so accreditation to and from the donation. From families and organization, Francophone organization, And we work with the provincial archives about the public archives. So we have a book open school or history. And we develop valorization, so like sharing and develop project activities to talk about history, Francophone history in Saskatchewan. So almost all activities in French, because the financing of French activities like the vitality of community. But when we have some asking or just question or just interest for English organization, we help for that. So we develop all that sharing. It's very, very vast. Like we can do exhibition. We work closely with all Immersion and French Francophone school in Saskatchewan to develop resources, workshop, a lot of workshop each year. And we have a festival, a Heritage Days festival each year since almost 20 years. So this is, it's a festival in French for kids. So elementary school, it's a proper elementary schools. And during the festival is in historic places in Saskatchewan, and we develop one thematic. So each year is a different thematic, like we can develop the history of Voyager. We can develop history of multi-culture, history of First Nation in French in Wanuskewin, for example, and multi-culture in Batoche. So the next for this year, in 2025, we return in Homestead Motherwell in the south of Saskatchewan to develop the pioneer period and colonization. So yeah, it's, we have a lot of validation action activities. And actually, since 2 or 3 years, we have a boutique. And since 1 year, we have a bookstore. So it's a new exhibition. Yeah, we developed a bookstore in Saskatoon. It's a part of librarian activities, library activities on a part, just because it's a like actually Nation Francaise-Poise, it's a bookstore, French bookstore, it's the only one Western and Northern Canada Francophone bookstore. So board like to keep Francophone services on a book and in Saskatchewan. So that's why we continue to work.
Is your bookstore available online? Like, is that something that somebody can like order a book if they're looking for something?
Yeah, it's online. At the beginning, we developed a boutique. It's not a bookstore. Bookstore is in just 1 year. And in 2021, during the pandemic situation, pandemic crisis, we need to change some financing project because of the restriction. So we're looking to develop a marketing visual and marketing project just because we would like to reinforce the proud and the pride identity for the Francophone teenager in a rural community. So just to any sportswear or bunny hug or anything with a name of the community, and we insert the name, the date of foundation of each community. So we insert information about heritage, Francophone heritage, inside all the marketing project and products. So at the beginning, the boutique, and we transform into the bookstore in 2022, because the last bookstore in Saskatchewan and Canada closed in Gravelbourg in the south of Provence. So that's why we developed that. So we have at the beginning in the website, e-commerce website, and right now we have the e-commerce and the boutique in Saskatoon in a local market place. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of questions from people looking for their ancestors, genealogy questions?
We receive a lot. I don't know if it's a lot or not, but we receive each year some question from for ancestor. A lot of people come from Quebec or France. Like each year we have one family from France to come to see the family, the family in Saskatchewan or in Canada. So it just, he come back with a big travel from France or Belgium. But yeah, we have some questions. We don't have a lot of activities with genealogy. We are counseled to go on Saint Boniface or SGNO. It's a Genealogical Society of Northwest. It's a Francophone historical society too in Alberta. But the most both have a lot of resources and information of genealogy. Yeah, so it's a specific domain of the history of genealogy because we need a lot of resources and specific resources about history, family, and village history, etc. Yeah.
So what brought you to Saskatchewan? What keeps you there?
So yeah, for me, I come from France in Auvergne in volcano in the center, in the middle and center in France. Yeah, you have a old, very old volcano in France. So I come from Auvergne and Limousin. I come to develop a project in Manitoba at the beginning. So I would like to understand what the Francophone minority, what's mean minority in a language, because in France we don't have any this problem. And I don't understand in the past, I don't understand how the language where the community had the minority, so like you speak or you don't speak. So at the past, it's my mind. So I go in Manitoba just for 6 months project in artistic because I'm a musician at the beginning. I'm not this archivist. And after that, I don't want to, in the past, I don't want to come back in France because I see a very very good challenges in a Western community in Francophone Western community. Very good challenges to help Francophone community, Francophone people to develop the proud and cultural activities. And after that, I go in Regina, Saskatchewan, to find a contract with a cultural center. Conseil culturel francophone. It's a like a cultural board or artistic arts board in Saskatchewan for the Francophone community. So I work in a project coordinator with that. But I come back. So we come back in France just 1 year, and I come back in Western Canada after that, in Regina. And after that, I work for the French Historical Society. At the beginning, I just need to find any jobs or hit, okay, it's reality. And that I see a very good hot challenges in the organization in history. Like I like a history. I beginning a history in my past in the university. I didn't finish my degree. But like history is a domain like I love that. But I didn't things to work in. When I was a student. But in Regina, a lot of people said, what you come back in Regina, what you come back in Saskatchewan, because Saskatchewan is Saskatchewan in Canada. So yeah, but it's very nice province. It's quiet, very quiet. It's not stressful. I live in Paris in the past, so I know what's a big city. And a lot of people here, so I know is a lot of activities, a lot of services, etc. In Montreal, or in Toronto, in Vancouver, but in Saskatchewan we have full services like we need, and but we have a quiet place, very respectful, very very friendly in Saskatchewan. People, English or not, is very friendly, and I know a lot of guys see the flat place. You see, Saskatchewan is flat, and Alberta or BC, we see the mountain, but we don't see the good things in Saskatchewan. In all of license plate is bright Saskatchewan living sky. So in Saskatchewan, we don't need to see the flat country. We need to see the biggest sky in Canada. Like the same thing in a mountain. We don't see the sky in a mountain. We need to see the mountain. So for me, that's a very good place to live it. Yeah.
Does the society have any plans for the month of the Francophonie in March?
Yeah, we have activities with young organization, the festival for Francophile, the festival for youth in Regina, on one day. So we present the trade fair we present a dance, French Canadian dance, and a sash. Like we create in 2017 a Francescois sash. It's a yellow sash, so like very unique. And this sash talk about the history, the pillar of the history of Francophone in Saskatchewan. So we have activity with that, and we have the bookstore in the festival. In March, we get a lot of workshop in school. Like I think all weeks the 12 workshop in the school in March. So very good for that. And we support a lot of activities from the community, regional community, regional community.
Well, I want to thank you very much for making yourself available. I wanted to wish you a happy month of the Francophonie, and I'll be checking out your bookstore.
That was my conversation with Alexandre Chartier, Executive Director of Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2025. Thanks for tuning in.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present The Pit, the first release into local punk and alt-rock band Sonic Souvenir's new era of their sound. The Pit, in the vision of its makers, marks a revolution in the professionalism and quality of their music and performance. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Pit by Sonic Souvenir on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
This CDG month, discover how Queen's alumni are driving meaningful change through impactful careers aligned with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. On Wednesday, March 26, Queen's students are invited to join Queen's Career Services and the Principal's Office for the Work with Impact alumni panel discussion. You will hear inspiring stories, gain insights into professional journeys, and learn practical strategies for creating social impact and inspiring hope through your own career. Register to attend through My Career or through Queen's CDG Month Canada calendar.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Plugged in My Ears. This week, we're joined by our guest and dear friend who comes on fairly often, James. We were just having a conversation before we started recording this about our dear mentor, who is now departed. And he's been really monumental. Not departed in the sense that he's passed away, but departed in the sense that he's moved on to other things in life. We were just talking about how we enjoyed their presence so much and how they were so fundamental and monumental to our betterment and establishment. So that's one of the things we should talk about. This may be one of the last episodes of Plugged in My Ears. Kyle Adam and I have been doing this for the last 2 years. James came on this year and he's been an amazing addition when he's come out. But it's been really remarkable. So maybe at the end of this, depending on what happens, we'll talk about some lovely moments and highlights over the years. But I thought I would just start it off with that. Now let's get on to some real stuff. Adam was just with our dearest friend the other day. Would you want to talk about the Frontenac? Because you were covering the Frontenac game. And I know the OHL is kind of a contentious place right now.
Yeah, sure. I covered the Frontenacs game on Sunday, actually. They were taking on the Brampton Steelheads. It was the last game of the regular season. The game really didn't mean very much. Kingston already had their first-round opponent locked up, and as did Brampton, so we saw a lot of backups in. But Kingston lost 5-1, but you could tell the effort really wasn't there. So they entered the playoffs on a two-game losing streak, which I don't know if that's too big of a deal, especially with only one of those games really mattering. That one game that they did lose was for the conference. If they had won that game, they would have won the Eastern Conference. So
and
that
Barry
one's
won
done.
That.
Sorry?
Barry won the Eastern Conference, right?
No, Brantford Bulldogs won the...
Oh, they clinched?
Yeah.
I thought it was Barry.
Yeah, Barry came second, but because they won their division. And the OHL works is the top two division win, like the two division winners automatically get the first and second seed. So Kingston, I think, was really like, tied with Barry, but yeah. Doesn't really matter. Kingston plays Sudbury in the first round. And the OHL is kind of spread out. Like in the East, it's like there's five good teams, and then the other three that are in the playoffs are kind of just stinkers. But Sudbury is probably the best of the stinkers. So I think Kingston kind of lucked out with this one.
That is so accurate, though. It's yeah. Not, like beyond belief how accurate that is. They're the only like okay team. They're the only team with a 0.5 of the bad ones.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it was a terrible conference.
But there was a situation. Pretty weak. So on the last day, if the 67s won and North Bay lost, then North Bay and the 67s would have had to play a one-game playoff to determine who goes to the playoffs for that the eighth seed. But the 67s got blown out, so it didn't even matter, and North Bay won their game. So we kind of avoided a cool, I don't know, clinching scenario, because that's not even like the first like clinching. The clinching is like goes off of a regulation and overtime wins, but they would have had the same amount of overtime regulation wins unless someone won in a shootout, which those wins don't count. So it was a pretty interesting day for the other games in the OHL, but the Kingston game was
kind of not interesting.
It was interesting. It just like you could tell they were going pretty easy. And a lot of the, I would say the healthy scratches were in. And yeah. They played their third string goalie, which, I mean, those games are good for like the younger guys to get some experience heading into next year, but wanted to rest a lot of their starters, make sure no big injuries happened.
Well, that's understandable. Yeah. The Oilers were doing that the other day at practice, too, when they called up former Harvard hockey goalie and Oxford hockey goalie Mark Carney, the new Prime Minister of Canada. But let's talk not about politics, rather about sports. Lots happening in the NHL. I actually don't really know what's going on with Edmonton. I kind of have to rely on Kyle for that. But lots of interesting stuff. Ottawa and Montreal, from the last time we were here, are now both in a wild card position. So we're all happy. The tempers are low. We're jovial today. James here is a Vancouver guy, and I don't know. Vancouver's not doing bad. It's not doing great. It's just they're being Vancouver. Yeah, there it is what it is. I've given up on them a little bit this season. I mean, I was pretty devastated when we lost JT Miller for almost nothing.
You didn't have him for nothing. You lost him for a broken back to Elias Pettersson and can't play.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, Petty's a huge asset, especially this season. so that was too bad. And JT's been unreal on the Rangers right after getting traded. But we'll just have to see what happens. Last year was a big year, winning the Pacific and then taking the Oilers to 7. So, you know, hopefully we can bounce back. But you know, these boys are making me a bit of an Ottawa fan as well. So.
What's your diagnosis on Demko? He's got some it's got some weak bones or something. They just can't seem to heal.
Yeah, I think he's skipping his morning milk and afternoon. I heard that was prescribed by some of the trainers, and he's just not a fan of the milk. So we're gonna get it. Hopefully, he can get on some calcium supplementation. That would be optimal. But yeah, he's got to figure it out. But
what type of milk? Like 0, 2%, 3.5?
Preferably not American.
I think he was taking some notes from Montembeau, and he's also going on to the massing phase. No, I'm just kidding. But anyways, so that'd be. But no, I think Demko, if he can kind of figure out his bone situation, I mean, he can be potentially top five goal in the league. So we're hoping to see that.
Yeah. Well, if he trains with Ekblad in the summer, you know, I think he'll bounce back pretty heavily.
But, well, yeah, from what I understand, Ekblad has some really good herbal teas that really help him exceed and dominate and become more of a physically dominant, mature, kind of mutant ninja turtle like player.
Yeah. Some of those have been imported from Russia, and they, you know, they tend to leave out some of the ingredients.
And sometimes they come in a gaseous form too. But anywho, let's get back to the real important stuff. The meat on the bone here. Big game tomorrow night. Three big games, actually. Ottawa plays, Montreal plays the Blues. And that's going to be a big game because they're both pretty hot right now. Blues are a little bit hotter than Montreal, but Montreal's doing okay. But more interestingly, I think, is that the Capitals and the Winnipeg Jets are playing each other. That'll be an interesting game to watch because those are two cup contenders. I think it's fair to say that. I actually don't think either of them are going to win the cup, but they're both cup contenders.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how little consideration Winnipeg is getting for how good they've been, but just recency bias on playoff success.
I think, well, one of the reasons is they're a really small market, like exceptionally small in the NHL. I mean, even though they have a pretty dedicated fan base, they're just not big.
Mm.
Their numbers for attendance haven't been great either, last time I checked. I thought they were having issues getting people out to their games.
I mean, I think the issue is that the way the NHL works is the prices are standardized, but they can increase if there's a higher demand, right? And so the standardized pricing for Winnipeg is kind of rough. Like, you know, it's a small market. Like, Winnipeg's not a huge city either. Like,
14,000 seats in the arena.
It's kind of hard to fill up 14,000 seats, mm-hmm. like, consistently with that small of a city and when the tickets are so expensive. So yeah. it's tough.
They're 30th in the league in attendance for the one of the best teams in the league. That's pretty terrible, honestly.
It's not terrible. It's unacceptable.
They're only outselling the San Jose Sharks and the Utah Hockey Club. So
Utah's not tickets either?
Do you see what Utah is doing, though? So the mayor of Salt Lake City said that he would make the subscription for Utah $1 per month for the end of the season.
Really?
To like watch the games, yeah.
A dollar.
Because ticket? I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it has to do with them being excluded from some of the deals because they're brand new, mm-hmm. and maybe they're able to bypass some of the like Sportsnet and other kind of like handcuffs, I guess, for media. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how it is, but I think the government essentially is subsidizing it because they're trying to increase popularity of it.
Well, you know, one thing that's kind of... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, James.
Oh, no. I was just going to say we got to go to Utah and watch some games for a dollar.
Yeah, we do have to go to Utah and watch some games for a dollar.
Well,
but also, I mean...
Oh, sorry. I meant subscriptions. Like, it's like online. Not the game.
Oh,
like,
to watch online.
Like the subscription. Yeah.
I thought it must not be right, but anyways.
Yeah, still too expensive for me in USD, but, you know, well...
It's just not a hockey place, though. It's Utah.
Yeah, they're trying to increase it, but I mean, hockey's gotten much more popular in the States, much, much more, actually.
I mean, yeah, I guess it has.
Some of the other sports falling out of favor, and I'd say hockey's moving on in.
That's a crazy perspective that Montreal literally has double the amount of people at their games than Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does Utah get on average? What they say?
11,000, and Montreal gets 21,000.
Montreal must sell every night.
I remember the last time they haven't sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I should hope that Ottawa sells out. Ottawa has a big selling out problem. It's not been as bad this year, but some years in the playoffs, they don't even sell out.
It's just the location. It's literally like, it's just the
You can Ottawa take the rink. Party bus all the way down.
Yeah, but it takes an hour. I've taken it. It takes like an hour, over an hour.
That's fun, though.
I mean, for someone that, yeah, is willing, I mean, I didn't mind it, but I'm just saying, like, it's not, if the O train and the other things went directly there, it'd be, they'd sell out every game.
Mm-hmm. They're 21st with 17,000.
Okay, that's not bad, though, because Ottawa hasn't, I think it's 19,000 something capacity building.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at those numbers across the board, they're actually not bad. They're solid numbers. Yeah.
Who's got the biggest stadium? Is it the Canadians?
Yeah. I think the.
I thought Dallas.
I think capacity wise, I thought the Blackhawks did. But I might be wrong about that.
Huh.
I don't know.
I'm surprised the Leafs don't have like better attendance. Like, I guess is that just because the rink can't fit as many?
No, because think about it. I don't know if you've been to the Ottawa Arena recently, but they have the Club Bell that's set up there. It's basically kind of like a buffet on the ice. Mm. Toronto has the same thing too in their arena. So they actually have like a bunch of sections that are selected, exclusively for really wealthy people to go and have like a 5-star Michelin experience while they watch the game. That's why they lose a lot of seating. So I think that they probably actually do have the same capacity as Montreal, but they never reach it because they allocate so much of their seating area to the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's only one arena in the world that has more seating capacity than Montreal, and that's the St. Petersburg Arena
in the K?
Russia. Yeah. Hmm. Has 22,000 and Montreal has 21,000.
Can you imagine that's playing in the massive?
I didn't realize the Montreal stadium was that big. Whoa.
Oh, it's massive. I went to my first Montreal game this year and it was probably the biggest and most electric arena sporting event everything I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to go to
tremendous
one,
experience. I mean, I would go to every game if I could. I was telling my
friend. What game did you go to?
I saw them play the Blue Jackets.
Did they win?
They won 5-1.
Dude,
so I was able to see them have kind of a blowout win too, which was nice.
Unreal.
Got to see Sean Monahan come back, so it was pretty cool to see.
That's interesting because I remember seeing like what you were saying that Dallas rink was huge, but I guess the capacity and rink size aren't necessarily like always like a full tell of like what how big the actual like physical rink is. But
yeah, well, Buffalo has a really
Buffalo's
large.
Got the ninth biggest and like the 29th lowest or 27th lowest.
But that is such a nice rink, though. I love it in that arena. It is so nice. It's so spacious. So spacious.
Yeah, it's nice.
You just kind of feel like you're walking through, I don't know, like the Vatican of hockey when you're there because all around the arena are tons of buffets. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you have to pay to get them, obviously. It's just really cool the way they have it set up. I don't know. There's something nice about Buffalo. And their jerseys look good now, too, and their jerseys look terrible.
I mean, that's
before.
Pretty good. The Ottawa. So Ottawa fills up 17,000, and our max capacity is only a bit, but, like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like Dalene. I like Thompson. They're just not that good.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue. They're okay. But go ahead, Adams. What's that?
There's an AHL arena, but I guess it's because it's, like, also an NBA arena that is bigger than Ottawa's.
Which one?
Cleveland's. But I guess because Cleveland's got the Cavaliers.
Oh, yeah.
They probably put up the curtains.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? On the bleachers, they usually what they do if teams don't sell out, they'll move everyone from the upper bowls down to the lower bowls and they'll put up curtains so on TV it gives the impression that the arena sold out when in reality it's not. So the 67s do that a lot. The Senators in their last few years when they weren't doing so great would do that every once in a while. They'd move everyone in the 300s down to the 200s to put up the curtains. Mm-hmm. Although I don't actually think too many teams do that, but I do know that for PWHL games that happen in really big arenas, they always put up the curtains because they want to create the illusion that there's more people there because then they can actually raise the prices of tickets because there's more competition for them. And that actually works really well. Brian Burke spoke about that for a while. He was on Sportsnet the other day in the morning, and he was explaining that one of the biggest issues the PWHL has at the moment is that they don't actually have an arena that fits their demand. And so when they play in arenas that are massive and they don't sell out, it makes it seem like no one's there, which actually has a negative impact on their ticket sales. The impression that lots of people are going creates FOMO, I guess, to some degree. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives their ticket sales, which is kind of cool to think about.
This is like rooted in human psychology. Anytime something feels more exclusive or like other people want to do it more, and like if an arena's filled, it feels like more exclusive. Where like when you're like, they see a bunch of empty seats, it's kind of just...
Yeah, I mean the Ottawa PWHL games definitely sell out,
but they play at TD Place.
Yeah, they don't play at the Ottawa.
Yeah, but they do sell out every game. But if they played, they've tried it. They played at the Scotiabank Center. Or I think called CT Canadian Tire Center. I keep forgetting it's Canadian Tire Center.
It went back to the Canadian Tire Center. Yeah, it wasn't for a brief moment.
Yeah, they didn't come close to selling out.
I think the problem is just the Ottawa Senators are like a very established market, and not only that, but they also play other teams that are also established. So
which is true.
It's just.
And Ottawa will always attract other people.
It takes time. You cannot just start things out of the blue like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're building up, and I'm sure it'll grow more. I think they need to expand a bit before they can scale up to bigger rinks like that. But
yeah, they probably do. They probably do indeed. Also, Queens men's hockey unfortunate loss in the quarterfinals at Nationals against Saskatchewan. But
oh,
really
did they?
Cool, yeah, really cool in youth sports hockey. The super underdogs, U Ottawa, beat the University of New Brunswick. The University of New Brunswick's first loss in 3 years in men's hockey to go on to the finals, and they won. Ottawa won the finals.
Which their is first kind of loss in 3 years?
Yeah, kind of insane because those Ottawa guys actually aren't that good.
What was it? Is a total collapse from the New Brunswick guys?
It was overtime.
Hard work will always beat talent.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, that's kind of what's going
on. Probably solid goaltending too.
Yeah, I guess so. One of the guys who used to coach me, used to train me, Ryan Hand, he's now one of their coaches too. He's a smart guy. He used to play in the queue. He was 2 years older than Crosby, but he knew what he was talking about. So I'm sure his coaching has helped a lot. With that. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting.
I guess, and do you think UNB's models definitely suddenly shifted significantly with the NCAA?
I mean, if change? I was an NCAA team, I'd be hunting all those guys. Most of the guys who go to UNB have East Coast or American Hockey League offers, but elect to go to university.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Most guys who go play U Sports played in the OWQ, whatever you want to call it, CHL, and then they were overagers who were good, but not good enough to be on the first two or three lines. Yet they weren't bad enough to get sent down to Junior A. And because of that, they kind of weren't good enough for the East Coast League or the American League. So they go to university, U Sports instead. And those guys, I don't actually know if an NCAA team would want. I think they probably kind of would and wouldn't. But UNB, it's a different story. Like, those are guys who chose school over professional hockey.
I thought there was also a rumor that they were getting paid.
Yeah. I mean...
Are they rumors? Or
there's famous quote from
Lawrence. No one knows how much.
That a rumor is only a rumor until it's proven.
Yeah, because their team suddenly got really good.
Yeah, it did get really good. I mean, one of my good buddies is there, Jax Dubois. He's a phenomenal hockey player. He has the record for most faceoff wins in OHL history at 937 last year. And the next closest guy, I think, was at 600 and something. So, impressive guy. And by the way, that was only in 1,052 faceoffs.
Wouldn't they just put him out for almost everything, though?
Anytime there was a faceoff in their end, they put him out and he won.
Mm-hmm.
I went to go watch them in their last game. They got eliminated by North Bay in the playoffs last year, and he won every single faceoff he took that game.
But he's a big guy, right?
Yeah, he's 6'5", and he's about 230.
Yeah,
regardless,
he's not really easy to move
regardless
around.
Regardless, though, that's insane.
Yeah, that's
it was kind of nuts.
Unbelievable,
dude! I can't believe Marchand is on the Cats now, bro.
I know. They put the two rats together.
I know.
Well, yeah, I was saying that's, you know,
like Venice before the plague.
They got a whole lot nastier in a playoff format. I mean, Matthew's still pretty injured as far as I can tell, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would want to.
If Tkachuk doesn't come back, I think they're going to struggle, but if he does, they're going
to
be.
Who are they poised to play? The Leafs?
Right now, they're the division leaders.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're poised to play either Ottawa or Montreal.
Yeah, Ottawa or Montreal, I guess.
They play Montreal. Or no, they play Ottawa.
Yeah, Ottawa, because Toronto's actually the first thing.
Okay.
Washington would play Montreal.
Oh, and then Ottawa would play Florida.
And Toronto would play Tampa and Carolina.
That's pretty rough.
What are your boys?
Tampa eliminates Toronto.
I think Montreal easy takes Washington.
I actually agree with that. Oh. I fully do agree with that.
I don't think Washington's that good.
Ovi's.
Can you say that again, Adam?
If I'm Montreal, I would rather play Washington over Florida, Toronto, or Tampa.
Okay,
or
well, explain why, though.
You think Montreal's going to beat the Caps?
I think Washington's a bit fluky. I really do. I think Logan Thompson is a solid good story, but so is Andrew Hammond. And we don't really talk about him much anymore. I'm just not convinced. I think Ovechkin's going to tone it down, honestly, after the regular season, because the goals
they're
don't
good
count.
Good without Ovechkin, though. Even when Ovechkin wasn't there, they were still winning games. They're the second best team.
One advantage.
I think Montreal beating them would be a miracle.
It's
that's
happened
just my
before.
Opinion.
2010, first round, Washington was the one seed. Montreal was the eighth seed. Montreal came back and won that series in seven games. Went all the way to the conference finals with a backup goalie.
And such are the fairy tales upon which many dreams and memories will sustain themselves. But not to say that it won't happen again. I actually do think Montreal would beat Washington because one advantage that Washington has is that once they're allowed to stop playing OV in the playoffs, because let's be real, they only play him so he can get Gretzky's record. They become so much better because they have one less liability on the ice.
I don't think that's true.
Totally think that's true. Have you seen this guy try and skate?
Hey,
he looks like an emperor penguin on the ice.
He looks a little better this year, to be fair. Playoffs was real tough to watch.
Because he was a centerman last playoffs, no?
Maybe, but he certainly wasn't moving much faster last playoffs.
They made him a winger now because he was as a centerman, you have to go full length of the ice each time, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just too much.
Oh, it was far.
Isn't that a problem, though?
They have no playoff experience.
Yeah.
The team has no playoff
experience.
No one.
Okay, I'm sorry. They got like a few guys who won a Stanley Cup a few years ago in Washington.
So what? Ovechkin and Carlson?
Ovechkin. There definitely is more guys.
There isn't. Well.
Really?
There
Everyone's isn't. Gone from that team.
They have a, like no, some breakout players.
They went
players,
through a mini
like,
rebuild.
Connor McMichael looks really, really good this year. They're Tom deep. Wilson's been playing up a bunch. They're really deep. I don't know. I think they can do pretty well.
Okay, then I'll throw that argument at you, Adam. Who does Montreal have that has playoff and Stanley Cup winning experience? Not Gallagher.
Suzuki, Caulfield.
They won
Gallagher,
a Stanley Cup.
They went all the way to the final.
But they didn't win.
You're absolutely right.
But they know what to do to lose. They know what to do to win.
They know what it takes to win
they
three playoffs.
They got pushed in the final, though.
But they also know what it takes to lose.
They also beat Vegas in that playoff run.
Yeah.
Vegas didn't.
Yeah. I think that my worry.
Vegas
I mean,
was a great team that year. Montreal was not.
Playoffs.
Montreal was not.
Not in playoffs that year.
Well, let's also be real. The playoffs is like a new season all over. Everything that happens in the regular season is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
All that matters in the playoffs is who scores more goals than the other team.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd be worried about the Caps. Their power play is definitely a bit lower ranked than you'd think it would be for being so high in the standings. They're actually got the 16th ranked power play, so that's kind of weak. But as their goaltending is very good right now, they have the third best penalty kill. Because that I would say that's mostly attributed to goaltending, though. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Thompson is one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I agree with the fact that they'd get walked by the Canadians, but
of course they're going to get walked. Are you serious?
You know, I think they'd have some.
On it right now.
I think if they go to the second round, they might have some problems against a team with stronger special teams. But
dude, I feel like Connor McMichael and Strome have had breakout seasons, and they've elevated to a level they never have before.
Mm-hmm.
They got Ovi, who he's a little bit of Emperor Penguin out there, but he can still snooze. Tom Wilson's playing really well. They got Luke Dubois.
I do too.
They got Mangiapane. I don't know. I just think they're pretty deep. They got Chychrun, unfortunately.
Pierre-Luc Dubois is a double agent for
John
Montreal.
Carlson,
Matt Roy. Actually just going to tank the series on
purpose. Their decor is really solid,
their decor is really,
really good.
But they have a bunch of guys that they picked up that are...
The one advantage that Montreal has is they have the great man, Martin Saint-Louis, and he knows how to win hockey games.
One advantage, they have two huge advantages. One, they have no expectations.
Oh, I just swallowed my gum, bro.
I made James laugh too hard by speaking French.
What's wrong with Marty Saint-Louis?
Martin Saint-Louis? Nothing. He is the great man.
He is great.
But sorry, what were you saying, Adam? I didn't mean to grossly interrupt you there.
I'm just saying Montreal has no expectations to do well in the playoffs, and Washington does. So Washington's got way more to lose than Montreal does.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually wouldn't mind if you're right, though. It'd be fun to see Montreal upset the Caps.
I mean, hey, the second Ottawa gets eliminated, and I'm cheering for Montreal if they're still in it. How do you not cheer for Montreal?
Oh, I mean, I cheer for every Canadian team that's not the Leafs.
Same.
Like,
or the Flames.
That's the one time I prefer an American team winning.
I honestly do not. If the Leafs were in the final, I don't think I would cheer for the Leafs to win the Stanley Cup.
I would cheer for a team that the Orange Man commissioned over the Leafs, and I actually do mean that.
I think it depends what like team they're playing. If it's like Vegas or the Leafs, I'd just be
I just probably wouldn't watch.
That's like worst case.
I don't know if I'm rooting big time Vegas here, but
I think I actually cheer for Leafs over Vegas. But that's one of the.
Things. I think the correct answer is I'm just not gonna watch the finals.
Yeah. I just go have a beer anyway somewhere else and watch curling.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I don't know though. I just can't rally behind the Leafs. I don't know how Leafs fans did it when Montreal was in the finals, but. Like when they lit the CN Tower red, blue, and white, I was like, that's ridiculous.
I kind of get it.
Montreal's not letting anything blue and white when Toronto's in the finals.
Yeah, that's true.
Wasn't that some sort of bet they might have lost? Vancouver lost a bet against the Oilers last season, and the mayor of Vancouver had to hang up some Oilers paraphernalia or something.
I just know that for the finals. Maybe if, like, it would, for the finals, I saw that they did that for the CN Tower.
Well, you know, I can't blame them, though. How do you not cheer for Montreal? Like, that's the one team that everyone kind of has to like in the country. I mean, it's not like
I don't think that's true.
To me, the Montreal Canadiens is more than a hockey team. That's the history of a people. That's like a national team.
Yeah, I would like to see them very like. Yeah, I honestly think they're a bit stronger. I want to see them have like a dynasty.
I just don't know if everyone feels.
They're building some pretty good team though.
I like that perspective.
I think if they make the playoffs this year. Say they lose the first round. Oh, well. I don't even care if they make the playoffs, honestly. Next year is looking really good for them.
For Montreal?
For Montreal.
Yeah, it is.
Because they've got so much confidence, and they're not losing anyone. Everyone's locked up. The only players they're losing are the old bums like Savard. We don't need him out there anymore.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I called Ovi an Emperor Penguin, so I can't really talk.
I don't know. There's some guys that are definitely liabilities out there for Montreal, and it's not the young guys.
Are they Jacob Trouba level of liability?
I saw Jacob Trouba the other night. I forgot who it was.
Was it his teammate?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I'm kidding.
That's who did? And Trevor Zegras slashed someone like crazy in the face. I think it was McDavid.
Really? He did that? I forgot about that.
Well, he just has a wild stick. Like, he just doesn't control it.
Anaheim's hired better than the Kraken?
Kraken's been weak, pretty weak.
Oof. Let's not forget the Ottawa native leads the Anaheim Ducks, Mason McTavish. So we can't be too critical.
I have to say, I don't know. I thought McTavish had a breakout season this year. Kind of don't know what happened there, but I think it's just because his team has been struggling all around. But yeah, he did not have a breakout season. I'll tell you that.
No. Were you going to say something there, James?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to see what your guys' Stanley Cup winning predictions are. Who's in the final? Who do you have in the final? And then who wins and how many games?
I personally see Edmonton in the finals with Ottawa, and I see Edmonton winning in seven.
That'd be dope. I see Edmonton Cats again, and Edmonton in five.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, OT on the last two games.
Does McJesus score?
Oh, McJesus scores the game winner, and it's just extremely special. It might be McDavid to dry in his kitchen. Like super sharp angle. Anyways, I'm still thinking about that last detail there. But
Lotus,
I have to say, I think the Oilers are going to pull like a bit of a Vegas here, and I think they're going to have a bunch of guys. I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl aren't playing right now, but they're going to have. I think Evander Kane's going to come back. I think they're pulling a Mark Stone a little bit with the. He's you know, they said he's for sure injured for quite some time. Just yesterday, I think. But. I think they're pulling to Mark Stone with that one. I think he's coming back. I saw another thing. Even if he doesn't like come back with full like, you know, scoring capabilities and everything, if they keep him as a fourth liner who just bruises up the other team, perfect. I'm happy with that. I think their decor got much stronger. I think they look pretty good. I know, unfortunately, lost Dylan Holloway, who's been fantastic on the Blues.
So good.
Love to see it, but man, that hurts. I think they're gonna do some numbers this year. I think Drysdale's hot, and you know, McDavid's I guess we'd consider him not hot, even though he has 90 points, but so I think they're looking pretty nice. And then I don't know if I'm saying the Cats, maybe.
Well, Dr. Whale, what do you think?
No, we got Kyle's not done his prediction yet.
Oh, I thought you were taking a pause and thought.
No, he doesn't know they're beaten.
Oh.
I would almost, I'd say either I'd say the Panthers are probably going to go the two. I'd be safe with that. I'd say Tampa, though. Tampa's a sneaker pick. I think they're a little undervalued. They've got like decent bit of, you know, like nice veterans. I think Kucherov and Gensel combo is pretty deadly. And Vasilevsky, like, you know, he's a seasoned goalie that can definitely help you win.
He could have a big playoffs. Hagel's been really good this year.
And Hagel.
Been really, really good this year. So, yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I feel like as amazing as Stamkos has been, absolute legend, but I feel like him going to Nashville and then I just think Gensel's on a different level just age-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Where he is in his career. So I think that gives him a lot more potential.
I think Hagel got elevated after they moved Stamkos. And it kind of just, you know, he took a new position on the team. He's got speed, and, you know, they've been using him out there. But he's also just a great individual player.
Just a lot of good skaters, man. Mm-hmm. Braden Point, too. Like, you just watch that team. It's pretty fun to watch their offense.
I agree. I think it's going to be the automatic Mikko Rantanen Stanley Cup ring bowl. It's going to be Colorado and Carolina, the teams that both traded Mikko Rantanen this year. So Rantanen's going to win a ring either way, but he's not going to get to celebrate winning the cup because he's on Dallas. So that's what it's going to be. I think that's our show because we're pretty much out of time. But yeah.
Wait, do you get a ring? Do you get a ring if you've been on the team?
I'm pretty sure you do. You played it. You contributed to that Stanley Cup.